You may read Gail Collins' column in the New York Times. She's been writing it since 1995. She also served as the editorial page editor from 2001 to 2007, the first woman to hold that position. So if you're doing the math, you may be thinking she should just curl up in a fetal position and exit the stage, right? Because, well, she can't be young. Well, thank goodness this isn't the 1830s when elderly women at dancing parties in America were literally sidelined spectators as the young people danced. Oh, and back then, elderly meant in their 30s. In colonial times in early America, women had clout as they aged because they knew how to do things like eat or make light with candles. At other times in history, they were expected to have their babies shrivel up from menopause and go away. Gail Collins' latest book, her seventh, traces the history of women aging in America, some of them lost to history but found here. None of them put their dogs in a crate on top of their car on a drive to Canada. I'm sorry, we can't talk to Gail Collins without referencing, as she did for years, the fact that then-presidential candidate Mitt Romney did just that. Her book is No Stopping Us Now, The Adventures of Older Women in American History, and she joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Gail, welcome back.
Thank you.
This is overwhelming. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, you know, I first got the idea when I was writing one of my previous women's history books, and I ran across this letter from the very early male colonists who were desperately writing back to England looking for wives because there were no women there for them to marry, and saying their qualifications were must be civil and under 50 years of age. And I thought, wow, the vision of what a young woman is changed a lot over the years. And, you know, until you got to the point where in the late 1800s in the cities, if you were 22 and you weren't married, people worried about you.
Right.
So it's gone up and down and in and out. And then I my second thing that just completely freaked me out, when I first started to think about writing it, I thought I might call it You're Not Getting Older, You're Getting Better, because of that old commercial
right.
from the 70s, you know, that about hair coloring.
You're not getting older, you're getting better and getting to me.
Loving Care, the hair color that gives you not just better color, better hair. You're not getting older. You're getting better.
I looked up that ad, and the ad begins. This is in 1970-something. These days, if a woman is over 25, she's considered old. And I thought, wow.
What?
I was around for that. I was around for that. What
you didn't
happened?
Even know that. Well, that's the, I mean, one of the through lines of the book is, as you say, how different things were in early America. They, you know, maybe because men were so desperate for women, we'd like to think they understood that a 50-year-old woman could be a good companion. But you do point out that, you know, in that time, there was also a respect for women because they did know how to do things. But then you get, you know, the early 1900s. Women who were achieving so much in the late 1800s had to step aside for 19-year-old flappers.
Everything that you look at in history, I'm sorry to say, comes down to economics in some way, shape, or form. Early American housewives were really, really valuable. They made all the stuff the family needed, the food. They made candles. They made butter. They grew chickens. They had a huge economy going on that really supported their families. And then when people moved to the cities, there was really nothing much for women to do in the house except have babies. And at that point, people lost total interest in any woman that was beyond childbearing age.
Yeah.
She just had no point at all. And then when we moved on again and suddenly people started working, and especially when you hit the post-war era in America, when people got used to the idea that everybody should be middle class and live in a suburb and have a certain standard of living, and then the 70s kicked in and the economy wouldn't support it on one income, the idea that women were going to be needed to work, even if they were married and had children, transformed everything. Once you're a good earner, you have the same status as a man when it comes to age.
Well, by the way, I want to point out that this is a history of women and aging in America. And you're quick to point out that at times when it's just horrible for elderly white women, you always point out along the way when it was far worse for elderly black women.
Yeah.
Even elderly men who...
Actually, in some ways, it was worse. African-American homes tended to be more welcoming of relatives than many white homes. But if you didn't have enough money, to support the family, then nobody was welcome. And to be honest, it was even worse for men, because at least if you had an older woman, she could help with the housework and stuff like that. And older men were just beyond the pale. There was just nothing you could do with them.
Right. Nobody wanted them around. Well, with that caveat, in the colonial era, people actually thought it might be illegal to wear makeup.
Yeah. The state legislatures for a long time, and you can count on state legislators, they will do anything. But frequently, bills would come up early on suggesting that it be illegal to dye your hair or to wear makeup, because the idea was you were trying to trick a man into marrying you by making him think you were younger than you really were.
But then we're reminded, I mean, there's so many through lines here. You go ahead, you know, about 400 pages, and there we are in the 1970s, and it doesn't feel that much more advanced when people have to sign petitions to get their employers to let them wear slacks, pants. This is in the 70s. When you couple them together in the same book, it doesn't feel like much has changed.
But then, not so much longer after that, all the women in the federal government were allowed to wear slacks because there was an energy crisis. And people thought, well, keep them warm. You know, that's the least we can do. So things do move along, I have to say.
Sometimes slowly. But could we just take some more topics? Gray hair, for instance. We talked about the ad that now that was encouraging women to dye their hair at a time women would desperately start putting on caps and things to cover their hair because they were desperate not to show their age.
Yeah, there's a great picture of Dolly Madison wearing one of those caps that cover your entire hair. And there's three little phony black curls pooping out from the sides of it.
They're sewn to the caps.
Yeah. Once it became easy to color your hair and it looked natural, things were transformed. My friend Nora Ephron said, you know, the great transformation of women is not because of any feminism. It's because of hair dye. Once you could not get gray hair, you could do so many things for so much longer. And it's absolutely true. It really was transformative.
Talk about some of the important names from American history, including one of the architects of the women's rights movement, Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
She is one of my favorites, I've got to say.
Yes.
And her, she has many great contributions, but the one that really tickled me anyway was that she was around at a point in which it was considered shocking for women to speak out in public. That was just not their role. They were supposed to stay home with the kids, and people would get stoned and buildings would be burned down if there was a woman orator trying to speak about political matters. And she figured out that what you could do was just to look old, and she made a very big point of looking very matronly. She had gray hair. She talked about being a grandmother constantly. And she found that if you presented yourself as an old woman, you could get away with anything. And she would be running around the country playing cards with the soldiers and talking about not just about abolition, which was her great cause, but about divorce reform, anything, as long as she looked like this little old grandmother.
Because this was at a point in American history when that safe maternal grandmother was embraced.
Yes.
The padding had something to do with it because Susan B. Anthony, who, you know, had a parallel life to hers, except she was single and very thin, she had a harder time going out.
Yes, yes. It was like that stripped down spinster look that they found so unappealing.
And talk about menopause. It was seen as you might as well just put a fork in your eye to something that was liberating and a challenge to women to go out and do something for someone else, to volunteer, to have women's clubs. It was a whole other mindset.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we're talking about the pre-Civil War era with Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. When once the idea came around that once you were older, you could go out and do stuff, you could be a public person, people started writing odes to menopause. Oh, glorious freedom. Here we are. We can go out and do things in the world. And then you started a little bit later, but still in the 19th century, to have doctors who not only regarded menopause as an aging bad thing, but sort of as a sign of incipient insanity. There were strong feelings that if you had sex after menopause, you would go nuts. And suddenly you had doctors experimenting with like putting chimpanzee ovaries in women and all this kind of strange stuff. It was supposed to keep off aging forever, and it moved into hormone replacement therapy, which was huge, huge, huge back in the 70s and the 80s until it was discovered that it was actually dangerous.
There's so much in here. I urge people to pick it up and then put it down when it makes you angry and pick it up again.
Thank you so much.
How are you? You know, how do you mind my asking how old you are and how you're feeling about it?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it's different now. It used to be you could lie about your age, but it's really tough to lie about your age when you're on Wikipedia.
Yes, Google.
you know, so I'm 73. But we had a party the other night when the book came out. Some friends of mine gave me a party, and there was one woman there who I have been friends with since the Eisenhower administration. Mm. My husband, who I've been married to for almost 50 years now, there are all these people who I've gotten over all these years and I've gotten to stay with. And just that community of friends and loved ones gets bigger and better all the time. And so it's a celebration for me.
Yeah. Gail Collins, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And to read an excerpt of Gail's book, No Stopping Us Now, go to hearandnow.org.